Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A cultural immersion program leads one participant to get immersed with Love in Taipei. That's the latest original movie on Paramount Plus, adapted from Abigail Heen Wen's novel, Love Boat Taipei. Wen is one of the film's executive producers, and she joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Also on deck, the Writers Guild and TV film producers are negotiating again. Our classic trivia question and Disney's television empire at a crossroad. That's our takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presented on many podcast destinations from the iHeartRadio Podcast Network and the Zencastr Creator Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. 79 wonderful degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and on this Friday afternoon, we welcome you to the program all about TV's current and future, wrapping up week one of our 17th year on the air. Great to have you with us, and we want to welcome those of you that are joining us on six brand new podcast platforms, Castro, CurioCaster, Pocket Cast, PodFriend, PodHero, and Sonnet. So if you're on those sites, we thank you for tuning in and supporting them, and we welcome you to the program for the very first time. And that means we now have over 40 podcast platforms they're taking our program. We have a wonderful guest in store for you over the next hour. We invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in, and when you do, you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and Tuner Radio. And you can also use our chat room. It's available right now. It's SimonApple04 by name. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll catch it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect with others by using Facebook's timeline feature. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio speaker, or tune-in screen. Follow those instructions, and other people can be live with you. Abigail Heen Wen from Love in Taipei on Paramount Plus. She'll join us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. Day one of a new round of new contract talks between the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers and the Writers Guild of America is underway. Representatives from both organizations are in Los Angeles at this hour in an effort to conclude the Writers Guild strike on since early May. Key issues on the table, residuals from mega content services, the size and status of writers' rooms for scripted television series, and guidelines for deployment of artificial intelligence by producers and writers. Screen Actors Guild AFTRA, whose members are now in week six of their strike against AMPTP, are not involved with this meeting, and a separate bargaining effort bringing those entities together on a new contract remains in limbo. If anything breaks over the course of the program, we will bring it to you. And we have one quickie for you. Season 4 of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City begins on Bravo September 5th, and that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Los Angeles, where she attended the premiere of Love in Taipei last night on Paramount Plus, we have the author of the book that provoked the movie. She's also one of the film's executive producers, and that is Abigail Heen Wen. Abigail, welcome to the program. Great to have you here, and congratulations on the film.
Hey, thank you so much for having me here. It's great to be here.
So the film has now been around over a day on Paramount Plus. What kind of feedback are you and the people involved getting?
Oh, gosh, it's been so fun. I think I'm just trying to respond to everybody, but at some point I just got to realize I can't do that. But I love hearing from people who've read the book, and they're pointing out the differences to me between the book and the film adaptation. People love the characters. I've got this Team Xavier versus Team Rick thing going on over social media. So it's been a lot of fun.
I checked out Rotten Tomatoes early this afternoon. You have an 88 out of 100 score so far, which is really amazing, given the film has, again, only been out for about a day on Paramount Plus. From the feedback you're getting, what do people like most about your movie?
So I think they love the characters, and that's, I think, what people fell in love with the novel. So they enjoy seeing the characters, like, on screen live. They love the city of Taipei, which is magical. It's beautifully depicted in the film. And then for me personally, I love seeing the dance on the screen, which, because you can't get that in the book to the same effect, that kinetic energy, which is awesome.
How did you come up with the idea for this in the first place? This is based on the first of a series of books called Love Boat Taipei. The first one was called Love Boat Taipei. There's two more, including one coming out soon. How did you get inspired to do that novel and then get the film going?
Absolutely. So there's actually a real program that's been around since the 1960s. It was an overseas Taiwanese youth language and training program where parents from all over the world would send their kids back to Asia to learn language and culture. and also to find a spouse. And it turned out there would be a lot of like couples that came out of this program, and that's how that's nicknamed Love Boat. It's actually named after that 1970s show that, you know, folks are familiar with. So it's kind of, you know, there's similar programs in other countries. Maybe the other most well-known one is Birthright in Israel. But this one was in Taipei, and, you know, since the 1960s, thousands of Asian American and Asian Canadian and, you know, Asian European and Australian youth have gone to this program. And I went on it as the summer after my freshman year at Harvard, thinking I was going for language and culture, and then I thought it was just this summer free-for-all where there's, like, no parental supervision and all the kids are going crazy in the best of ways. So I think I just had this story in me for a really long time. It wasn't really well-known outside the community, but it was such a unique, special summer. And as I grew as a writer, I eventually came to the point where I felt like, okay, I really need to write this story.
How long did it take to go from novel to film?
I started writing the novel in 2015, just as I finished up my MFA program at Vermont College of Fine Arts. And it took me 3 years to write the novel. Like, it went through so many iterations. I actually published it at draft 31. The book came out in 2020, January, and then there's a whole pre-production, post-production thing that goes on. But, you know, basically we started working on the film pretty much early 2020, and now it's coming out, you know, 2023, so 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that a lot of people you worked with on the movie were involved in XO Kitty, the popular Netflix series based on the To All the Friends I've Loved Before set of movies.
Right. Actually, one fun little behind the scenes is my cast or my crew in Taipei, we were all filming there in December and January of 2021 to 2022. They right after we filmed, they all went to South Korea to film XO Kitty. So, it was fun to hear all the stories and just seeing them getting ready for that.
How much of you, Abigail, is the main character? And what you went through is what the main character goes through.
So Eva Wong, for those who haven't, you know, not familiar with the story yet, she's an 18-year-old girl who goes from Ohio to Taipei. Her parents send her kicking and screaming, and she is in a intensive 7-year med school program, but she secretly wants to be a dancer. So the journey for her is a journey of identity and self-discovery and learning to find the courage to, like, pursue her passions while still honoring her family. And for me, I would say the internal journeys of the characters are mine, because that is kind of my journey. My family wanted me to go into public service and government. And there was a point in my life when I had to call my dad that I just can't hack this world. It's not for me. I was working in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill at the time, and I was like, you know, this world feels really empty, a lot of empty power that was, you know, without an understanding of what real people were going through. There's no, like, life experience. And I remember telling my dad, I'm going to let everyone down. I just can't do this. And I was crying, and he said, you know what, it's okay. And I really needed to hear that. I was, like, 20, 22 at the time, and I needed to have that release. I subsequently went to law school, and I work in venture capital and artificial intelligence in Silicon Valley. And so I've taken a very, like, unusual path to where I am today. But actually, I find I'm in some ways doing the same thing now. But I do joke that Eva Wong gets to figure out a little sooner than I did.
Love in Taipei is the new movie on Paramount Plus, available on smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. The film premiered yesterday, and we've got the author that the film is adapted from and the executive producer on the film, that is Abigail Hing Wen. She joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And happy you're joining us on this Friday afternoon for the program about TV's current and future. Simon Abbott, I'm with you on the other side of the U.S. of A, New Haven, New York, 79 degrees at the top of the hour. Let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. Next episode is Monday at this hour, and joining us, our lead guest will be an Emmy-nominated producer who has a lot to say about the strikes with the actors and the writers and the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers. His name is Michael Mosella, and believe me, he has a lot to share about what is going on with these strikes, and he wants a settlement fast. You'll hear him Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. You know, Abigail, we've talked over the 16 years we've been on the air with a lot of authors who have seen their work adapted for original made-for-TV movies and television series. And it's interesting how some want to be more involved in the television side of things as an executive producer, and others are sort of saying, no, I'll be just a name only, and I'll let other people who are more expertise than I am do the work. What was your feeling about being an executive producer on this?
Yes, yeah, so from the beginning, it was really important as we were talking as producers for me to be involved. I think because this is such an unusual, very specifically Asian American story, and it was important for me to be involved to be a voice for the, you know, the authentic representation on the screen. And also, I'm interested in moving into producing myself. I am actually producing other projects now. It fits my skill set, having worked in Silicon Valley in technology and in finance and venture capital. So filmmaking actually turns out to be those three things: technology, finance, and creative storytelling. So it actually is kind of a natural segue for me, given all my experience in the past. But I did enjoy being on set the entire time. You know, commenting on the takes, commenting on the script, getting to know the actors and speaking with them about their storylines and their character art. So for me, it was a really rewarding experience. And I think of the final film as just a very short but, like, delicious slice of the entire universe of the Love Boat story, which, as you mentioned, spans three novels.
Mm-hmm. The film is shot on location in Taipei, Taiwan. I've seen the trailer. It is gorgeous scenery, gorgeous sets, gorgeous everything. And this is a very sensitive question. Was there any thought, because of the tension between the People's Republic of China and the United States and Taiwan, about not shooting it in Taipei?
So I think that, you know, that's something that we thought about even with the book coming out. The book is, you know, called Love But Forever, or Love But Taipei. And really, it's not a political book. It's a story about culture, about family, about heritage. And so, like, I don't ever think we thought there would be an issue.
How did you have to work with a film or TV authority in Taipei to get the locations you wanted to, or to get clearance to go to areas of the city?
Yeah, so we worked with a local production company, One Production, and they handled all those types of permits for us. But definitely the local community was very supportive of the film, very excited about it. I was told that it was one of the largest budget films about Taipei to ever come out, so that was exciting for them as well.
Talk about the person at the center of the film, Ashley Lau, who plays Ever. We know her from Physical, which is in now its final season on Apple TV Plus with Rose Byrne. She's on the Hunger Games movies and a number of other things. Talk about her getting into the character and what kind of guidance you gave her about being in that character.
So, you know, interestingly, she was a wonderful choice. When we were going through, we had an open casting call because I knew we were going to have to make young stars with a film with so many Asian American characters who were quite young. But we were really, really glad to find her. She's also Taiwanese American. So for her, it actually ended up being her own journey of discovery and returning to home. She and her mother had family in Taipei. Her mother was on set with us the whole time too. And, you know, I think she really took very seriously being number one. It was her first time after 10 years of, you know, being in the industry. And all of us, you know, I was told from the beginning, like, from the biggest stars down to the, you know, the personal assistants and makeup artists, everyone had experienced being marginalized or excluded. And I think as a result, everyone really went out of their way to make the set feel inclusive. And she was part of that. You know, she was accessible. She looked out for people. She was kind. And I think it was just a wonderful, magical time together, not hierarchical, but really just a caring environment. And I felt like, wow, this is a model of how it should be. And I was just so thrilled to be a part of that.
Did she have a chance to meet any of the people who had gone through this type of cultural immersion program and to hear, like, what experience it was for them?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, we actually felt like for the cast, that was their cultural experience because they got to them, see, we would roam around going to the night markets together and visiting all the sites, especially because Taipei at the time was closed. The borders were closed because of COVID. It gave us a little bit of like an oasis to just be together and experience this culture in a place that was still pretty, you know, awake and alive and functional because they had done a really great job with COVID. But yeah, as far as, you know, the experience, like, embodying that experience, certainly, like, you know, her mother being, like, someone to me, also, you know, a child of immigrants, so she just grew up in that kind of family and in that world. We did talk about the character, and she took very seriously, like, embodying and really trying to convey an authentic journey for that character forever long.
You have a very interesting cast in the film. In addition to Ashley Lau, you've got Ross Butler, who was in the To All the Boys movies. He plays Rick Rue, one of the two people that our heroine gets romantically involved with. You've got some other folks, Nico Raga, who is the other person in this menage a trois in Taipei. But you've also got Chelsea Zhang as a friend of the character, whose name is Ever, by the way. Sophie, and Cindy Chang plays Ever's aunt. And talk about what it took to bring those characters, bring those people together to make something happen.
Yeah, well, you know, Ross definitely, I think, was we had our sights set on him from the very beginning. You know, he's such a great actor. He was a perfect character for Wick, and actually at some point the book was handed to him, I think even before the book came out into the world, and people are like, yeah, you are definitely Rick, and I think Ross felt that as well. So, yeah, I think Rick is he's kind of an Asian-American character. He's not typically seen in the media. He is a jock, and, like, really kind of all these girls after him. And I felt like, you know, I know guys like him. My husband was an athlete. He was at Princeton with a bunch of Asian-American jock friends, and I remember just at the time I met them, I was surprised by that. But, like, that's the reality of the Asian-American community. There are people who just play so many different roles, and for so many years you just didn't see that reflected in media. So I was thrilled when Ross agreed to play Rick, and he was actually our first cast, the first person that we brought on, and then after that everyone else was cast around him.
Let's talk about the director and the writers. The director is Arvin Chen, who did a film that got critical acclaim called Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow, and the adapters of the film is Charlie O and Mackenzie Dorr. What kind of relationship did you have with all three about shaping the movie the way you wanted it to be?
Yeah, so I was thrilled, you know, that Arvin agreed to be the director. I had actually met him in 2019 through mutual friends, and at the time we had talked about the project, and he read the book even before it came out as well. You know, and I remember at the time he gave me advice. We sat at a Starbucks with my husband, and he said to me, like, you have to have multiple projects because you just never know what's going to go forward. So when I saw him again, you know, obviously we spent time on set together, but when I saw him again at the premiere just 2 nights ago, I reminded him, but he said that to me, and I said, and here it is. Like, here we are today, and this project made it all the way to the end. So I think just the fact of casting a director who was Taiwanese-American, like, he actually had grown up in the States, but he went back to Taipei to have a film career because he found at the time he wasn't able to do what he wanted to do in the States. I think having someone who was very intimately familiar with the city was, like, one of the biggest steps we could have taken to make sure that there was authentic representation. And, you know, he has an architecture background, so you can see that in the film. Like, he's really great about showcasing the beauty of the buildings and the city. Like, you see these circular doorways behind the characters, and I think that's just amazing. And then the writer, Charlie O, he was our, you know, we'd auditioned a number of screenwriters, and they would give their takes on how they would adapt this 400-page novel into a 90-page script. And you know, what the kind of the centering visual effects were. And I think what really struck us about Charlie is how well he was able to condense material. Like, he knew how to have all the characters meet very quickly, so we got to know them very, very quickly. And then another innovation was to bring the dance instructor in the novel closer to home in the character of Auntie Shu. So, you know, readers may notice that there's that difference. She's not actually a new character. She's a dance instructor, but she is now brought closer to home as Ever's aunt, which helped to buttress Ever's storyline. So Charlie and I would talk through, like, the character arcs. I would read, you know, and comment on the scripts. And I think it was great to have just another mind who knew the characters as well as I did. And another fun little tidbit, I was researching book two in Taipei at the same time that he was working on the script. And so a lot of the locations that end up in book two also end up in the film, like Elephant Mountain and the place where Xavier's family business is set on the Dada Chang Wharf.
Mm-hmm. What was your favorite scene to watch as it was being filmed?
Well, I love dance. That's a huge theme in the novel, and I was super excited to see that on the screen. So you don't see it in the film, but the dance sequence is actually filmed as an entire dance performance set to music by Elefante, and they, you know, the cast would perform the entire thing together as part of the rehearsals. But for the film itself, it got spliced up into different segments, so you never actually get to see the whole thing. But I loved watching the cast come together around that with the bow staff and the fan dancing and just the energy of that. And we ended up rehearsing at nighttime because that's the only time we had. But, yeah, that was really fun to see come to life.
Incidentally, when you were casting people in the film who were going to dance, did you cast more dancers who could act as opposed to actors who could dance? Now, I understand Ashley does dance, the main character, but
that's
curious,
right,
if there was, like, a philosophy in terms of who you wanted, particularly in those dance sequences.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, when I first began speaking to producers, the first question people had to me was TV versus film. And then the second question was, is this a musical, like a full-blown dance musical, like a Broadway musical, or are we just going to lean more heavily into the dance elements? And as you can see, that's, you know, we went with the latter. It's a movie that leans more heavily into the dance elements. But we did cast actors for acting, although Ashley had dance experience, and Chelsea also has dance experience. And I think that was like a bonus. But, you know, you certainly can make you in other ways. Like, there's a lot of movie magic that goes on, and that's partly why you see, like, you don't see a full-blown dance sequence. These are not their primary, you know, their primary profession is as actors. So the dance takes a second step to that, or it's kind of a backseat to that.
Abigail Hing Wen is who you're hearing this half hour on Tomorrow Televised. She is the writer of the book that inspired the new movie on Paramount Plus, Love in Taipei, which was filmed on location in that city in Taiwan. And she is with us for the rest of this half hour here on Tomorrow Televised. Simon Appel with you live from New York. Thanks for joining us this Friday afternoon as we wrap up the first week of our 17th year on the air. And for those who didn't catch the top of the program, we're happy to tell you that we are now on over 40 podcast platforms. So we really want to welcome those of you that are checking us out on Castro, CurioCaster, Pocket Cast, PodFriend, PodHero, and Sonnet. We really appreciate all of you being there. If you have a question or comment, Abigail, in our final minutes with her on the air, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Coming up in our second half hour, our classic trivia question of the week, our takeaway of the week, Disney's TV empire at a crossroad, and other things too. So stay tuned for that. And we, of course, enjoy having you with us. And by the way, if you missed any part of our show, if you missed our earlier episodes this week, on Monday we had our anniversary episode with Brad Schwartz, the head of programming at the CW. Then yesterday we had the new head of the TV Critics Association, Jacqueline Cutler. Go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or go to our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, or any of our podcast platforms to get the show as soon as we go off the air. Abigail, is there one theme that you wanted to leave people with in this film about either Asian American culture, the Asian American family dynamic, or any other theme?
Great question. You know, there's a line, actually, that got changed over time. I changed it right on set, but I'm really happy with the way it came out. When Ever walks into the room and she sees so many different types of Asian Americans, like there's dancing ones, there's people putting on makeup, there's these cool guys, and she's like, wow, like, why is everyone so, and Sophie says to her, this isn't the 90s ever. Everyone knows Asians are cool now. And I've gotten so much positive feedback about that line, which I'm, you know, I'm thrilled for. And I think that's kind of the takeaway, like, this is a movie about cool Asian Americans, and they are cool. So, and I love that. I love that.
What do you think, by the way, about the status of Asian Americans in television? Over the last year or two, we have seen various shows that feature Asian Americans in major roles, shows like Problems, Partner Track on Netflix, Kung Fu, which wrapped up 3 years on the CW this spring. We now have Chime TV, which is an Asian American network that is finally off the ground on cable systems, presumably on smart TV sets and smart devices. What's your feeling about the role that Asian Americans are playing on both sides of the camera and in television?
Well, you know, I am thrilled and honored to be part of what I see as a movement. Like, for so many years, Asian Americans were erased and not given the spotlight. And I think I'm glad to see that there are now stories coming out that also are very different from each other. Like, they are Asian American, but the characters are, and the feel and the vibe, the tone, like, each of them has, like, a very distinctive one that are all different from, you know, Love in Taipei. And I love that there are so many different stories coming out of the community, and I know there's just so many more. And I love, too, that these stories can have general audiences. Like, my editor at HarperCollins is Italian-American, as is my agent at William Morris Endeavor, and they really relate to my characters. Like, these characters are just like my family, and I love that, too, because I think that's, in some ways, maybe the biggest theme of the story is that we're all human. At the core, we fall in love, we make bad choices, we make good choices, we move forward, and we become better human beings. And I think that's really what all this is about.
So what is next for you? I understand that you have the third book in this Love Boat series coming out, called Love Boat Forever, coming out through HarperCollins. When is that coming out? And then also, because of your experience on this film, is anyone thinking, hey, maybe we can do a sequel, or maybe we can do a television series.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So I loved what the New York Times review said about the book. They said they feel like this movie was more like a pilot that's setting up a sequel or setting up, you know, a series. I do think of the movie as, the movie actually, it completes Ever's arc with respect to her family, but the romance arc actually ends at what I think of as the midpoint of the first novel, and there's so much more to go. There's the second novel, which follows fan favorites Sophie and Xavier, into a new adventure where they try to take control of their own futures and find themselves back in Taipei on this unexpected reunion with the whole gang. And then the third novel, as you were mentioning, Love Boat Forever, comes out November 7th from HarperCollins. And that's set 6 years later when Ever's younger sister, Pearl, goes on the boat with her own adventure. Mark, who's a character in book one and in the movie, he comes back as the dragon's role. And all the rest of the characters are back. So we get to see like what happens to the completion of their arc. So I'm really excited for that book to launch into the world. And then I have more novels that have not been announced yet, but they're going to be announced soon, and more film and TV projects in the work as well.
Well, no matter what happens with this, and certainly it sounds like you could go with either a sequel or more than one made-for-TV movie sequel to this film, or you could turn it into a series, which certainly has a lot of different storylines you can work with. Has the experience geared you toward, hey, maybe I'd like to establish more of a career developing more television, involving Asian Americans or not?
Absolutely. No, I have so many more projects. You know, going back to that first conversation I had with our director before he was our director, you know, I got bit by the bug. I was like, I want a movie in Hollywood. And if this one doesn't happen, I want to have like other options. And so I do have 12 active projects in the work right now. So I think this is not the last movie. This is just the beginning.
Before you go, what does the Culture Immersion Program have to say about this? Have they contacted you saying, hey, good job, you really got the idea of what we do? Or, that's an interesting way to portray us.
Yeah, no, I love this question. Actually, no one's asked me this yet, but I did meet with their successors in Taipei. I think it was my third trip to Taiwan when I was researching book two. I had lunch with them. The program actually had been associated with a political party that went out of power in I think it was in 2020. So their funding actually had been cut, and it was a smaller program now. It's focused more like a three-week tour around the island. And actually at the end of last year, in December, at sunset. So I think they were excited about just this opportunity to really showcase Taipei to the world. And I think that continues to be the excitement coming out of that city. You know, there's been so many movies made in Taipei because it's a good place to film, but not a movie about themselves. And so I think really that's the most exciting part for them.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing, I understand you were at the premiere of the film in Los Angeles. What was it like? And how supportive has Paramount Plus been in terms of getting the word out about the movie?
Yeah, so they've been great. So the premiere was amazing. There were these purple pillows with Love in Taipei on it. And you know, the director was there. We got to say a few words. And really for me, like I was able to be there with some of my very dear friends who supported the books from the very beginning and getting word out on those. Jennifer Wu flew in from New York City to be there with me. And my college roommate from Harvard, Judy Hung, who also was a Love Boat alum, she was there. And I was just, I felt so good to be surrounded by people who I loved and who have just really worked so passionately to get the word out. And, you know, that's true of Paramount Plus as well. They've been really passionate about getting this story out into the world, and I'm really grateful for them.
You can see Love in Taipei for yourself on Paramount Plus, available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. More details about the service online, go to www.paramountplus.com. That's www.paramountplus, not the plus sign, the actual word, paramountplus.com. And you can find the third book in the Love Boat series, that's Love Boat Forever, coming out this fall through HarperCollins. And we'll keep you posted when the book is actually coming out. Abigail Hing Wen, thank you very much for coming on. Congratulating you and everybody involved in having the film debut yesterday in Paramount Plus. Looks like it's going to be a winner. Hopefully, maybe we'll have more adventures, either in made-for-TV movie or series form down the road. And we really appreciate you taking the time so soon after the premiere to be with us. And all the very best for you.
Thank you so much, Simon. Really appreciate your time as well. Be well.
You're welcome, Abigail. Thank you so much. Take care. Have a super weekend.
You too.
Abigail Hing Wen, the author of Love in Taipei, and the executive producer of the film, joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, classic trivia question of the week, a few notes to deal with, and our takeaway of the week. Is Disney's TV empire at a crossroads? Sounds like it, according to its chief, Bob Iger. All about that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching nearly 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you like a unique musical experience on radio, check out Off the Cuff Radio. You will be entertained tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio. That's Off the Cuff Radio tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Smart Be Televised on this Friday afternoon, day three of our start of week one of our 17th year on the air. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. Welcome to those just joining us at the bottom of the hour. 79 degrees, mostly cloudy here in the New York metro area. It's going to be a gorgeous weekend, low humidity, mid-80s the temperature. So if you're in the area, hope all is going well. And while we're at it, we want to send, again, our thoughts and prayers to everybody dealing with the weather tragedy in Maui, specifically that city that's been brought to the ground by a very, very freakish weather situation. At last report, more than 55 people dead, more than 1,000 people missing. A lot of first responders and people on the ground trying to do search and rescue efforts. There are some fires going on still in the area, and we want to send our very, very best thoughts and prayers from everyone on the mainland to everybody in Hawaii, and especially everybody in Maui. We're with you, and you will rebuild, no question about that. All right, time for our classic trivia question of the week. Final time we are offering this question, and if you're first with the correct answer, you will win a Chicago's Greatest Hits CD and a Uber card courtesy of AMC Networks. Here is the question. Who played the Thin Man on television? We are talking about the late 1950s MGM television adaptation of those very popular movies starring William Powell as Nick Charles and Myrna Loy as Nora Charles and that very cute scene-stealing dog known as Asta. In the TV version, Phyllis Kirk played Nora and Asta played Asta. And what we're asking is, who played Nick Charles' character, the Thin Man, on television? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, when you email, and we only take email answers, enclose your name and your mailing address so that if you do win, we can get the prize out to you as soon as possible. Only people, by the way, if you're a previous winner or you're a guest on this program, you are not eligible. Everybody else is. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post a question tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum, and X, the site previously known as Twitter, and to some people still known as Twitter, at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Once again, the question, who played the Thin Man on television? A Chicago Greatest Hits CD and Uber card from AMC Networks can be yours if you are first with that correct answer. So make it fly. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And again, if we don't have a winner by the end of today, question goes tomorrow on Facebook and X, previously known as Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter or X at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. That's what we like to say around here. So what are you waiting for? Get involved. Get the answer in. Sooner you do, sooner you may win. And, of course, all the very best. In a moment, we'll have our takeaway of the week. And we'd love to have your thoughts about that takeaway, so give us a call if the spirit moves you. It's 646-652-2906, 646-652-2906. Remember, the number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune, and Radio. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And for those of you that are tuning us in for the first time on our six brand-new podcast affiliates, Castro, CurioCaster, Pocket Cast, PodFriend, PodHero, and Sonic, take down that number so that if you can't catch us live from wherever you may be, on the road or in the office or whatever, you can use that number to ask our guests, get involved with our chat room. That's the way to go, okay? Okay. So got two things I want to share before we get into our takeaway. First, yesterday I committed a huge faux pas. And it dealt with the fact that speaking of chief executive of that venture, former NBC Universal ad executive Linda Yaccarino, was interviewed by Sarah Eisen, and I was doing a little item about that, and I botched her name up so badly to kingdom come, left, right, and center. So I apologize. If, Linda, you hear this, I apologize for screwing up your name big time, and we would love to have you, because there has been talk that Twitter might develop a television service, maybe even with video chat. So, Linda, you are welcome on this program anytime, and I deeply apologize for getting the name all blueyed up. Okay, it's Linda Yaccarino. Linda Yaccarino. I've been doing this like Bart Simpson on the Simpson board, chalkboard all day long. Linda Yaccarino. Okay? Okay. Secondly, I mentioned this last week during one of our episodes, but one of the things that we are about to do that we haven't done in a long time is to have advertiser support. We have already agreed to have one new advertiser on this program. We're looking at a second possibility. Done through our good friends at Zencaster, through the Zencaster Creator Network. And I just want you to know that hopefully, if all works out, we have a couple of things to deal with, we will start the advertising on our program week after next. Now, a couple of things about that. Number one, I want to be very clear. Yours truly will have control of which advertisers come on this program. Two, that the advertisers will be family-friendly. There will be products and services that will make a difference for you or people you love. Three, the advertising will not interrupt the heart and soul of this program, which is the exclusive interviews that we do, including the one we just did in our first half hour with Abigail Hing Wen, the author and executive producer of the new Paramount Plus movie, Love in Taipei, which is based on her best-selling novel, Love Boat Taipei. So they will be scheduled after our interviews. Sometimes they'll be before or after one of our features, like news notes, takeaway of the week, the classic trivia question segment, show to know, up, et cetera, et cetera. So I want you to know that we will place the ads in suitable time periods and that they will not, repeat, not interrupt the heart and soul of the program, our exclusive interviews, which really makes our show special and very different from anything else on the air. We feel that those interviews should be devoted to our guests and to your response by phone or chat room. So the ads, when we start running them, will not run in those portions. So I just want you to know that's the ad policy that we are setting. And if everything goes well, we have a couple things to work out with the folks at Zencaster and their creator network who are getting the ads through. We'll start running the ads from some terrific sponsors week after next. And we're very excited because it's about time we make some money from this program. Yours truly gets a revenue stream going again, and that would be nice so that it can help us keep this show going and maybe even expand it in some different ways over the course of the next year. So thank you for, and by the way, when we do have our advertising, please patronize them, and we will maybe have some other advertisers coming up too to sponsor individual segments, and we'll keep you posted on that. Now it's time for our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week, where we highlight a development or two that happened this week, about to pass, that we think you should keep in mind, front and center, as something that could impact the future of how you watch and use television. And our takeaway of the week this week is Walt Disney's television empire is at a crossroad. Now, let's give you some context about this. Chances are that you have grown up one way or another watching Walt Disney's television empire grow up. In the 1950s, it was the Disneyland show on ABC, and then there was the Mickey Mouse Club 5 days a week, weekday afternoons, and Zorro with Guy Williams. And then in the 60s, it was Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color on NBC. In the 1970s, it was Disney's Wonderful World, or Wonderful World of Disney. Then in the 1980s, we had the Disney Channel and ESPN, which Disney picked up from Getty Oil, with Hearst having still a small slice of it. And then in the decades to come, A&E Networks, Lifetime, having majority stakes in those services, and then getting involved with FX, National Geographic, Freeform, formerly ABC Family, and so on and so forth. So chances are you have grown up one way or another catching Disney's empire, and of course ABC, taking it from Capital Cities ABC. So now Disney has a sprawling TV empire. And when Bob Iger, the chief executive of Walt Disney, got on with financial analysts and investors on Wednesday afternoon following their company's latest quarterly report, which was mixed, Bob Iger made it clear that a lot of what he said to CNBC's David Faber the month before at Sun Valley, Idaho, where all the media moguls and mucky mucks meet every year for that Allen & Company conference, the press are not invited to catch or to catch from a big distance away, that a lot of what he said does stand. Number one, and when you take it all together, that this television empire is really at a crossroads. Why? Because some of the networks are not performing in terms of viewership and ad income, like ABC and others. The cable networks like ESPN and Disney Channel have lost viewers because of the fact that many subscribers to cable and satellite have yanked their cable line out and have substituted smart TV sets and smart devices for it, or multi-channel bundles that go through those products. And what's happening elsewhere at Disney? A terrible summer with movies this year like The Little Mermaid, Indiana Jones, Dial of Destiny, more recently The Haunted Mansion, and Elemental, although I understand Elemental is starting to make a comeback at the box office. And trouble with some of the theme parks. So right now, it's fair to say, and it's coming right from Bob Iger's mouth, that this Disney empire of television services is at a very pivotal crossroad. Iger made it clear at that Wednesday conference call that, yes, at some point, ESPN is going to, like ESPN Plus, become a service that will be available only on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. No more cable, no more satellite subscriptions. And as Bob Iger himself has said, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Secondly, that ESPN, in order to make that transition happen, is going to take on strategic partners. And the rumor mills are flying all over the place about whether those partners are people like FanDuel, DraftKings, whether it's Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, whether it is various sports leagues, the National Football League, the National Hockey League, the National Basketball Association, Major League Baseball, etc. Or some player from some different arena, or private equity firms. The talks are happening. I wouldn't say with who, and they're happening. And they're happening not just for distribution, but also to create content and maybe sports rights. And let's not forget that earlier this week, ESPN made a deal with a sports betting organization called Penn, which used to work with Barstool Sports, to be part of a project called ESPN Bet, where possibly you can make online bets to different events. And maybe, sooner than you think, you could make bets for the television set. Now, ESPN would not provide the odds. They would not set the odds themselves, but they would certainly promote content that would showcase the odds as set by Penn under the ESPN Bet name. It's easy to believe that Iger, just a few years ago, said, sports betting, not our game, not our frontier, too family unfriendly. And yet here they are now on the verge of really breaking out a marketplace in sports betting that could ultimately involve the ability for you to place that bet on the television set with your voice remote, or body language. And then there is a strong possibility that Disney will sell off some or many or most of its linear television services, whether it's ABC, Disney Channel, Freeform, FX, FXX, National Geographic, maybe even its stakes in A&E Networks and Lifetime to other players, who would then put those services, with the exception of ABC, on smart, well, actually with ABC too, on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. Again, question of when, not if. And a question of who will buy, as the song from Ozzy used to say. Who will buy? And when? And how much? Who would have thunk it when Disney picked up the assets of 20th Century Fox and their whole television empire, which included FX and FXX, etc., that they would be sold off to another player? And by the way, with Nat Geo, let's remember also it's Nat Geo Wild, Nat Geo Mundo, their Spanish language service. That would also go to another player. In other words, everything is open, is an open book. It's on the line. And Disney also made it clear on that call through Iger that there will be three pillars of business going forward that will create the majority of operating income and profitability for Walt Disney. The theme parks, the movies, and television studios, and mega content services, Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, and that transition from ESPN and its family of networks, ESPN2, ESPNU, ESPN News, ESPN Deportes, Spanish language, from linear cable and satellite distribution to smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. Yes, Disney's television empire is at a crossroad. No question anymore about it. And you get a sense from what Iger is saying that the crossroad is going to be taken sooner than later. One more thing with Bob Iger. As you know, last month when he had that interview with David Faber, Iger aroused the wrath of anger with both the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild AFTRA for what he had to say about their positions with the strikes, that their demands are unreasonable, they're out of touch with the way TV is produced and film is produced. Well, he sort of walked it back. He basically said he finally got empathy into the dialogue. And he shared, hey, I have tremendous respect for the creative community. We work with them all the time. And I'm personally willing to bring this situation to a close. Let's see if Bob Iger is held to the fire with that last statement. Let's see is as these negotiations, which started today with the Writers Guild, the Alliance of TV Motion Picture Producers, how involved Bob Iger gets. And not just Bob Iger, Ted Sarandos, the co-chief executive of Netflix, Michael Cavanaugh, the head of Comcast, parent of NBC Universal, and other major media executives who in recent weeks have said, we want a settlement to this. We want a fair and equitable settlement. You have your chance. It's time. Get involved. Don't wait for others to get involved. You get involved. And one more message to Fran Drescher and everybody at the Screen Actors Guild AFTRA. Don't wait to hear how the talks go with the Writers Guild. Don't wait. Get involved. Make a move. That's what the Alliance did. They made the move last week to get that meeting last Friday. And they made the move again to get what's going on right now happening with the Writers Guild. So don't wait for them. You make the move. Because maybe, just maybe, if you do, it might be the beginning. It might be the turning point to the end of a strike that is paralyzing with the Writers Guild strike, the Hollywood, the New York, the Chicago, all the TV production communities. And let's be clear here. The era of what I call Plentiful TV, others call Peak TV, is not done. It's been stalled, absolutely. But I'm very clear that once these settlements happen, and they can be settled, the issues can be resolved, that there will be an explosion of new television. It was very interesting to hear James Stewart, a popular writer who covers the media and other things, on CNBC this afternoon, saying that he thinks that Netflix, when they make a deal here through the alliance with the writers and the actors, that they will increase the spending for original content all over the world. And it'll be interesting to see if Disney Plus and others follow suit rather than cut back. And have you noticed that it is, for the most part, getting better, that these services like Paramount Plus and Max and Peacock, they are reducing the operating losses? Have you read their quarterlies? And they are getting into the profit mode, that Max may turn profitable by the end of this year. Netflix is already profitable. We don't know about Apple TV Plus and Prime Video, but it sounds like they're making hay, along with Amazon Freebie. And Roku's doing better, too. So let's say, using that Mark Twain metaphor, that the reports of the demise of Plentiful TV, that era, extremely exaggerated. And that is our takeaway of the week. Love to hear from you. We have a few minutes. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And while we have some moments, I want to again thank all three of our guests that have kicked off our 17th year on the air in such a great way. On Monday, we did our anniversary show with Brad Schwartz, the president of Prominent, the CW. Then yesterday, in a really big exclusive, we had one of the first interviews with the new president of the TV Critics Association, Jacqueline Cutler. And then today, coming right off the premiere yesterday of Love in Taipei on Paramount Plus, the novelist who created what was the source material for the film, and was the executive producer on Abigail Hing Wen. Great interviews with all three. Thank you all very much. You got our 17th year off to a great, great, great way. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in also for doing so. And also, I want to remind you that we've had a great year 16 too, and that many of our podcast sites do have all of our, or most of our episodes of year 16. So if you want to check them out, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And we've got our wonderful website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, for the fine folks on Podium. They do a great job with it. And hopefully we'll talk with them soon about expanding what that website can do. That's tomorrowbetelevised.com. Incidentally, there is a question box on that site. So if you have a question about television and you'd like us to answer it on the air, put your question down. Put down your name and your address. And if we use your question on the air, you get the credit for it. So check out that question box segment. That's over at our website, tomorrowwetelevise.com. And in case you missed the news note at the top of the program, talks are back, negotiations are back on between the Writers Guild and the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers. And hopefully they will continue to negotiate. There is a news blackout. So keep your fingers crossed that no news will end up being great news and that we're on the road finally to a deal with the writers. And in the meantime, let's see how soon Fran Drescher and the folks at SAG-AFTRA do their own talking with the Alliance. Like I said just a moment ago, don't wait for the other organizations to do their thing. You do your thing. Get involved with these talks and make those talks happen so that we can get both situations restored and the TV world back in business to engage, entertain, enlighten, inform, and inspire you, the viewer out there, and make deals that deal with the issues that all three organizations are dealing with and do it in a fair and equitable way that works for everybody. Can happen, and that's why conversation can handle that. And we hope it does starting today. So thank you all for being with us. And I want to remind you that we will be here next Monday and Friday at this very hour, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific Star Time. And joining us on Monday will be the Emmy-nominated producer Michael Mazzella. Promise you that he will have a lot to say about both the actors and the writers' strikes, so be sure to tune in for that and react to what he has to say by phone and chat room. And we have some other guests that we're working on for both shows next Monday and Friday. That's 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And one final time, I want to thank the following podcast sites who have started with us in the last few days. That's Castro, CurioCaster, Pocket Cast, PodFriend, PodHero, and Sonic. We now have over 40 various podcast sites that take our program, and we are really delighted. So to all of you listening to us on those podcast sites and others, thank you for doing so. Make us a regular habit and take down our number. So if you want to catch us live when we're on the air and simulcasting on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker and Tuner Radio, you can. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. So if you're at work, in your car, whatever, you can call us anytime while we're on the air. You can also use our chat room. So please feel free. Be involved. The more you are, the more you're going to have guests, the more they appreciate it. Absolutely. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And when you get a chance over the weekend, go to our podcast, more than 40 now, and you'll enjoy it. They're all really great sites. And this episode will be available, as well as others, minutes after we go off the air. We always love hearing from you. So we want to make the show as interactive as possible. So email me. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, use that for our classic trivia question. One last time, here's the question. Who played the Thin Man on TV? Chicago Greatest Hits CD, Uber Card from AMC Networks, on the line for you. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, you can also connect with me on social media. Facebook and LinkedIn is Simon Applebaum, and X, formerly Twitter, at UBC Simon TWBT. However you respond back to you within 24 hours. That's our promise, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not, say, those of Blog Talk Radio and other streamers of this program. Any show is BTR's General Manager, Dave Sonnenberg, is head of content. Website streams by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. Guitar Spakus is our web coordinator. But tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend ahead. We are back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. And whatever you're doing to now and then, make it safe. More than ever, make it great. And please keep the thoughts and prayers coming for everybody dealing with what's going on the island of Maui in Hawaii. Till the next time, stay well and stay tuned.